This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Jeff Berg. He's author of the new book, New Mexico Filmmaking, and he will be speaking this Friday, the 4th of December at 6 o'clock at Opposite Books at the DeVargas Mall here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. Nice to be back.
So how did you get interested in New Mexico movies? I mean, this goes back to the very beginning of filmmaking.
It does. I was living in Las Cruces on my second visit to New Mexico, shall we say. I moved back to New Mexico in 2001. And I went to the New Mexico Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum down there, which is a state-operated museum. And besides being a great museum, I noticed that they had a wonderful empty auditorium in which someone could show movies. And they were not using it for anything.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
I thought, oh boy, I've always wanted to show movies. Here's a chance to show, like, Westerns. I had Westerns in mind since it was the Farm and Ranch Museum. And maybe with a New Mexico connection as possible, because I knew there was some New Mexico movies, but not as many as there are. And I approached the history director and the events director, and they jumped on it right away, and it kind of went from there. So I started showing movies there on Saturday matinees in 2001, and it was successful from the start, even though my first movie had no New Mexico connection at all, except for the star of the movie, who used to live in New Mexico. And so as I researched things to show there, I discovered that there was, like, oh my God, there was, like, all these movies out there that I didn't know about, and it just kept growing and growing and growing, and I started writing about it as I could, and it just came to the point where I thought, well, there's not a book about this, and so let's try and do a book, and there
yeah.
It is. So,
now, what counts as a New Mexico movie? I mean, whether any scene in it was shot here, whether the theme is about New Mexico, whether or not it was shot here, whether the actors are from here, I mean, how big is your net?
Boy, it could have been huge. What this is kind of based on is the State Film Office's filmography, which was started by the late John Armijo, or continued by the late John Armijo, who was a state historian before he retired and sadly passed away about a year and a half ago. But John kept up the filmography, and he used anything that was an hour or more that had in length and had at least one scene shot in New Mexico, not like a drop-in, like, background shot or something like that, but it had to actually be shot in New Mexico. And the only exception to that were silent films, because they're all shorter than an hour, so we included in those as well. And so I kind of followed that as a guideline to what I came up with. And
otherwise, there'd be thousands of shorts,
yes.
For example.
And shorts, commercials, if I used the actors that live here or New Mexico, things that supposedly were shot in New Mexico, like High Noon was based in New Mexico, the old Gary Cooper Western. They never came close to the state line, but I could have like 16 volumes of this probably.
Yeah, like Longmire's supposed to be about Wyoming, but it's shot in New Mexico.
Exactly, yes.
So what were the first films made in New Mexico like, these silent films?
Most of them had a Western bent or things to do with, like you might say, local happenings. Some of the first short films, silent films, were shot in Silver City, and some of them related to the Mexican Revolution, which was, you know, just about to end at that time. Others were about mining, things going on in the mining industry down there, which, again, Silver City has a huge mining industry at that time. Las Vegas came into play after Silver City, and the old silent film star Tom Mix shot a bunch of films up there, short silent Western comedies mostly. And then Romaine Fielding, who was kind of like, one might say, one of the grandfathers of New Mexico filmmaking, had a studio up there, and he did some silent films, and was probably the first feature film ever shot in the state, which was never released, because it was basically also the first banned/censored film in film history for New Mexico as well.
Well, that was such an interesting story. I'd never heard of Romaine Fielding. Romaine Fielding seems to be one of these people who was intensely creative, prolific force of nature, made this film which angered the capitalists. What was it?
It's called The Golden God. And it was taken place in 1950. It was like a little futuristic thing.
That was 1950 was the future at
yeah,
the time,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, shooting in 1920, I believe it was. And it was this, I wish I could see it. I wish I could find something for it. There's some stills of the cast and crew, but there's really nothing else that I found yet. but it was made with a huge budget at the time, and they used the local National Guard. It was the first film that used airplanes. They had used machine guns in some scenes. It was just an enormous production, and it was Fielding himself starred as the character who played the Golden God, who was kind of like a leader of the, I guess you might call it, loosely call it the socialist movement at the time, which angered the censors immensely. He didn't quite finish the film here, and he kind of, for some reason, I'm not really recalling or don't ever found out, he moved to Galveston, Texas to finish the film. And then when the censors got it, he cut it also immensely to like a 2-hour film.
He cut it way down to a 2-hour film.
Yeah. Again, that being enormous at the time. And then the censors got a hold of it, and then that was that. And a lot of his work was destroyed in a fire, including any prints of that film that existed.
Yeah, it really is quite poignant that somebody who was so prolific really hasn't made it into history because of essentially a warehouse fire and censorship.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing to find that out. And a lot of that information came from my friend Turner Mijo again, who was doing a biography on Fielding when he passed away.
Yeah.
And he just had all this information. And he, I think he was probably going to go on to where the warehouse used to be if it still existed, if he had had the chance. So.
And so even the biography was cut short.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Exactly, yes.
Romaine Fielding, ladies and gentlemen, may your memory somehow live on.
He's still in Las Vegas, basically. If you go to the Plaza Hotel, he used to own that. And if you look on the side of it, you can still read the sign that they painted on the side says the Romaine Hotel.
Oh, okay.
And so that's like his afterlife, I guess, in Las Vegas.
Interesting. Now, those films were lost. What about the other silent films of the era? Do many of them still exist?
There's a few that exist. The very first piece of film that was shot in the state back in 1897 still exists. It's even on YouTube. It's called Indian Day School. And it was shot by, it's like almost like an experimental 1-minute piece shot by a crew sent out by Thomas Edison across country via the train to do such things. And they stopped at Isleta and shot that. And there's no plot, of course, because it's just a bunch of little kids circling in and out of school. But you also get a little bit of a look at the way that the American Indians are being treated at the time, too, because all the kids that are in the picture are American Indian boys and girls. And they're all wearing Anglo clothes, and they all have Anglo-style haircuts. It's kind of an interesting historical look as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And yet, on the other side, there's a lot of people, either Native or Hispanic people, played by white actors in other films.
Yes, very many. That's happened a lot. It's, and real American Indian actors and all people of color and women especially have gotten shortchanged in the industry until recent, like the last 20 years or so. It's pretty amazing. The other short films, there's a few that exist. You can find some of the Tom Mix films. There's two, I believe, Fielding films that you can still see that were really bad condition. There's several that were shot in Las Cruces that are lost as well around that same time, 1911, 1912. But they're few and far between.
One would hope that there was money and attention to restoration, because, I mean, that's a big part of our state history.
Yeah. Things do happen. Things do appear, not so much silent films as much anymore, although the last silent film shot in the state, which was as the horrible title of Redskin, but you consider that it was 1929 when they made it. It was, probably still a very appropriate term, but it's very pro-American Indian in that film. But then a copy of that was rediscovered some years ago and restored, magically restored, and it's just a beautiful print that they came up with. More recently, I just found out this weekend that a film that was considered lost that was shot in Santa Fe, that has Richie Havens in it, called Catch My Soul, a.k.a. Santa Fe Satan, was discovered about a year ago and just came out on DVD about 2 weeks ago again. This was directed by the guy that starred in the old TV show The Prisoner, Patrick McGoohan.
Oh, yes!
He lived here shortly, for a short time, and he did that film here. I just ordered it. I've not seen it, but it's been on my must-find list for a couple of years now. So.
And it was found.
There it was, yes. Success.
Very interesting. We're talking to Jeff Berg about New Mexico filmmaking. Now, New Mexico has always been a popular location for making films. Has it always been westerns, pretty much?
When doing the book, I kind of found that there was like maybe four major times of filmmaking in New Mexico. The silent era, which had, again, the Las Vegas and Silver City connections, along with the two in Las Cruces. And then the late 40s and the early 50s, when Gallup became a very big destination for films, mostly for westerns. There's lots and lots of westerns that were shot in the Red Rock State Park area. And along with some adventure films where the Gallup area stars as Sudan and other African countries as well, which is kind of fun.
That is hilarious.
And then when that ended, it was a pretty dry spell until the late 60s and then into the early 70s when Governor David Cargo made a huge effort to, with some Albuquerque businessmen and author Max Evans, to get the film industry to come to New Mexico. The governor was approached by two gentlemen from Albuquerque who had just seen the potential or talked about the potential, and the governor jumped on it right away, and so they were very successful in bringing in lots of mostly, not so much low-budget films, but not very well-known films here.
And that was in the late 60s, early 70s?
Yeah, and about a half of those were westerns, too. There's probably maybe 30 titles that you could find pretty easily. But westerns, again, were prominent then. And that kind of was their goal, because one of the interesting stories that I was told by a friend of mine the other day was that when Governor Cargo and Mr. Evans were trying to lure producers and filmmakers here, they set up a breakfast in Hollywood with a bunch of film producers and distributors and studio heads, and rented a small ballroom and had this big breakfast planned, and they made up a promotional film for the state, which Max said was one of the worst films ever made. And the day before Governor Cargo and Max were scheduled to go, they realized they didn't have anything proper to wear for such a meeting. So they went out and bought secondhand suits. And they wore their suits in the meeting, and they walk in the ballroom. And Max says, without exception, every person in there had either cowboy boots, jeans, creased jeans, of course, cowboy hat, like all brand new Western kind of wear. So they kind of jumped on the Western bandwagon. And they all loved the film, the promotional film, even though Max said it was just terrible. And so that was kind of like the opening of the door for that part of the film industry. And the first Western that came from that, the first film that came from that was a Western called The Good Guys and the Bad Guys, which was shot up around Chama.
Now, did you watch all the films that are mentioned in this book, I mean, that still exist?
No.
I mean, you'd spend years.
I could, yeah. There's about 800 altogether that I can come up with, counting the silent films and anything an hour or longer. And I do have copies of a lot of them. That's been my other goal, is to build a library of this. And I've probably watched maybe 200 of them altogether, but I've got copies of a bunch of other stuff, too. Some I don't want to watch on purpose, because there are a lot of low-budget, really, like, eye-rolling kind of things in there, but some are quite good.
What are some of your favorite films from different eras of New Mexico's filmmaking history?
Good question. Of the silent era, there's two that, since there's been so few that I've been able to see, there's two that kind of stand out. The Fielding film, The Rattlesnake, which is pretty interesting, and then Red Skin, which I mentioned before, which was also the first film to use color. And the 50s, there's a terrific little Western that Earl Flynn is in called Rocky Mountain. Troy Donahue is in another Western called A Distant Trumpet, which is has a really interesting side story about the American Indian actors talking to Troy Donahue in their native language and not saying what they think they're saying. They're telling him off in their native language because nobody bothered to translate it until about 5 years ago.
That's very funny.
There's a documentary called Real Injun, made by an American Indian filmmaker, who includes that scene with the actual translation, which is just hysterical. And then Ace in the Hole, which was a Kirk Douglas film noir piece, and Ride the Pink Horse, which is another film noir, which was partially shot around here in the late 40s by a guy named Robert Montgomery. The 60s eras, Easy Rider was a good one, that partially shot here. Two Lane Blacktop, which was used Burt's Burger Bowl for a great scene, was a good one.
Yeah, there's a lot of restaurants that are well known to the people who live there. A lot of locations, hotels, mm-hmm. Not to mention military installations as well, and not to mention the big, beautiful landscape.
Yeah, exactly. And those things all help draw people here. Santa Fe itself, of course, has to draw for filmmakers because it's Santa Fe, and it's when they're not working, they have lots to do and lots of places to eat and places to go and things to see. If you've never seen Julian Blacktop, I recommend it. It's, you either love it or hate it. It's, James Taylor is the star, the singer James Taylor, and he said he never saw it himself until 2009, and it was like almost 35 years after it came out. It's him and another guy driving cross country in a 55 Chevy, hardly saying a word. And I was driving my Burt's a few months ago, and there was a 50 after Burt's had closed like a week earlier. There was a 55 Chevy, just like the one in the movie, parked there, and these three despondent guys peering in the windows of Burt's because they were driving the other way on the route from the film from east to west.
Uh-huh.
And they were retracing the route as best they could, and they had wanted to have lunch at Burt's, and like Burt's had closed like a week earlier, and they were like almost in tears. But it's an interesting film for sure. Present day things, even though it doesn't fall under the parameter of the current film boom here, I guess you might say, The Hilo Country, which came out in 98 or so, I really liked a film called The Flock, which had Richard Gere in it, but was never released in the U.S. for some reason. And I even kind of like The Lone Ranger, the new Lone Ranger, but not too much. But there was a better version that was shot here back in the 80s, which everyone should see.
Oh, very interesting. Were a lot of New Mexicans employed over the history of the century of filmmaking that we're looking back on?
In the silent era, I think there was a lot of people used as extras and such. Most of the film crews and things, I think, were traveling film crews, so they came. They all came together. Like Fielding's crew came here from Arizona, then to Silver City, then lured to Las Vegas. They all went up there, then to Galveston. In the 50s, I think it's pretty much the same thing, because they use the train a lot to move all the equipment. You see a lot of the films that were shot along the rail lines here, which is why one of the reasons why Gallup was probably popular back then. So mostly, I think the crews and cast from those eras were imports. Now, however, things have changed dramatically, and there's been a lot of jobs created through the film industry, and the union here is very, very active, and I see names and credits of people that I've met over the years, too, which are local people, which is really cool to see. So, yeah, so present day has been much better for us, I think. So.
Yeah, I watched the first season of the TV show Manhattan not long ago, and there were people that I knew in the credits of it. It's a nice thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I used to work at the College of Santa Fe, and back when it was the College of Santa Fe, and I see names, specifically crew names from students that were there, and I'm like, yeah, that student made it. It's great to see that, so yeah.
We're talking to Jeff Berg about his new book, New Mexico Filmmaking. What role did women play in the history of New Mexico filmmaking, besides, obviously, as actresses? I mean, you always have to have an actress, pretty much, although, you know, women's roles have never been as good or as solid as men's roles in general, but what about other roles, screenwriters, directors, producers, and so on?
One of the more interesting things I found in my research, which was extensive, in terms of actresses, there were some plum roles for actresses over the years, but in terms of crew people, the only thing until, again, maybe 20 years ago, beyond women that did screenplays, and there was a number of those I discovered, or wrote the books that movies were based on, and then got involved in the production that way, there was really nothing. It wasn't until, I think it was 91 or 92, that the first feature film directed by a woman was shot in New Mexico, and that was shot in Deming, a film called Gas, Food, Lodging.
That is a great movie.
It really is.
That's a movie that stood the test of time, too.
Yeah, I have a film series that once a month film series that I screened it at a while back, and everyone, like the 10 people that showed up, they all really liked it, and she did a really nice job on that. It's a really strong coming-of-age film.
Yeah.
And that film also used mostly women for the crew on purpose, because Andrews really wanted to do that. Not so much, she's not from New Mexico, but she really wanted to do that. And mostly she does TV work now, but that film was a breakthrough for women in the industry here, I think, in some ways. Present day, there's been a lot more actresses and such that have come here to do lots of different things. There's definitely an increase in women getting involved in behind the scenes too, for sure. So I think it's also changing in the times, along with the tax incentives, being able to help create more positions as needed, you might say. So.
Now, as you said, I mean, we have a film incentive program now that started in the, I guess, close to the beginning of the 21st century, but also this film program that started in the late 60s, early 70s. So basically for what, the last sort of like 40, 50 years, there have been economic incentives to shoot movies in New Mexico?
There wasn't really much economic stuff done in the earlier years by Cargo and crew, and that whole kind of era, you might say, ended when he went out of office. It was a pretty dry spell between like 74, 75, and up to about 2000. So there really weren't any financial incentives at that time. But the current incentives have really helped a lot, and they were started by Governor Johnson, carried on by Governor Richardson, and then Governor Martinez has seen the light, shall we say.
Yeah, she was reluctant at first, and then what happened? She saw the numbers, probably.
I think they saw the numbers and the fact that in the job situation, I think hopefully somebody pointed out to her that if you look beyond just the tax figures and the bureaucratic numbers, you have to look at the places like you could have a whole crew here at Santa Fe Baking for breakfast. It helps the local economy. You could have a whole crew staying, you know, down the street at La Posada. You can have a whole crew, you know, running cars from Enterprise or whatever.
I've seen film crews here at the baking company.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. See, well, there you go. Prove my point.
Yep.
it all ties in, and I don't think they took that into consideration a lot. And that was kind of brought up from a study at NMSU, I believe, where one of those studies from about 4 or 5 years ago said, oh, by the way, how about adding this stuff in? And that made a huge, huge difference.
There was an important film which I want you to talk about called Salt of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that film, because they made a big comeback of that film several years ago, and there was a whole beautiful issue of the Pasatiempo devoted to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Salt of the Earth was the one of the three, besides The Golden God and a 1940s Western called The Outlaw, directed by Howard Hughes, was the third film made in New Mexico that was banned, shall we say, for some time. It was shot in the Silver City area, and it was by a gentleman named Herbert Biberman, who was probably a member of the Communist Party at the time, back in the 50s when it was shooting. And he gathered some other non-McCarthy-era friends, shall we say, people that were not for McCarthy, to film this movie. And it was based on a true story of a miner strike at a mine near Silver City, and starred... it used a lot of the actual people from the strike in the movie as extras and in smaller speaking roles and such. It was very, very intimidating to those in power, because it was pro-women, it was pro-Chicano, pro-Chicana, it was pro-miners, it was pro-everything that they were against, and the film even had trouble with some of the unions. When it came out, some of the union projectionists refused to run it, and at one theater, supposedly in San Francisco, the theater was raided, projectionists arrested, and the copies were confiscated.
Yeah.
And then there was debate about where the film actually debuted, but Biberman took a huge chance. The film was sat in limbo for many, many years until being rediscovered and restored, and now there's a documentary about the film and a book about the film. The actress, whose name escapes me at the moment, a very famous Mexican actress, her film career was ended by the movie. She ended up having to go to work in theater, and it's just...
Because it was pro-union and...
Pro-union, pro-Chicana, pro-Chicano,
yeah.
pro-everything except for white man, you know, in suits power.
Well, yeah, it was anti-exploitation, essentially.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, because at that time there was different different areas, like it was segregated housing, lousy housing to begin with, lower wages for Chicano miners. Women in the Chicano households didn't have running water in their homes. And it was abominable. It was just, like, unreal. So.
Yeah. It's amazing that this part of our tradition, namely fighting the unfair exploitation of power, it's such a huge part of American history, and it's so censored.
Mm-hmm.
It's so censored on so many levels, and movies are only one of them.
Yeah, yeah. Even today, it's still very censored, I think.
Yeah.
Other interesting thing, going back to the other censored film here just briefly, The Outlaw, Howard Hughes was going to make his movie whether they liked it or not, and Jane Russell, very famous actress at the time, so it's her film debut, and he designed specially enhanced undergarments to enhance the upper part of her body, shall we say, in certain scenes, and the censors just had a fit. They just went nuts with that, and there was a scene where it's alluded that she's going in the same bed with Billy the Kid, who's like in this fever state, and just to warm him up, of course. And then at the end of the scene, the tempo of the music just explodes, and the scene goes quick like that. But the film was banned for 3 years. Of course, when it came out, it made millions of dollars, stuff does.
Because, I mean, there's no such thing as bad publicity, especially when it's around Jane Russell's boobs.
Exactly, yes. Yes, and they are prominent, they display. They use a lot of interesting, I've got a really good photo in the book about one of those publicity shots that they used. And they also used a photo I found that they didn't put in the book, unfortunately, of an airship, of a dirigible, with lights on it. To fly over the cities where the movie was playing, with The Outlaw starring Jane Russell.
Yeah.
It's a really lousy movie, but Howard won, so.
Yeah, well, that's the way those things happen. Now, we have now so much film and television here. I mean, Breaking Bad being a huge example, Longmire being another. What have been the most successful productions in the state of New Mexico?
Some of the older titles that were very well received were Journey to the Center of the Earth, which was based on the Jules Verne book. And then there was Lonesome Dove, which was not so much financially successful, but it was successful on TV. 2001 Space Odyssey had a follow-up here called 2010, The Year We Made Contact, which did pretty well. Unfortunately, there's not a lot that did really, really well, but there are several. No Country for Old Men, which won the Oscar, did well. The Cowboys, which was one of the few films that John Wayne was ever killed in, did really well, but was released in 72 or so. And rediscovered movies have done pretty well, like Ace in the Hole, that Kirk Douglas one I mentioned earlier, did marvelously well, as did the Lonely Are the Brave, which was another one that Kirk Douglas made back in the 50s. Once they've been re-released and rediscovered, they've probably made more money now than when they first came out.
Has there been a kind of opening up of genres, the kind of movie or TV that you would shoot here in New Mexico? I mean, there's still Westerns, but it seems like it's a lot more than that now.
Yeah, there's been in recent years, especially current day, there's been a few Westerns, but it's not exclusively Westerns like it used to be way in the past. Border films like Sicario, which was partially shot here, which was hopefully that was financially successful because it was an outstanding movie. Part of that was shot in New Mexico. Border films and comedies are getting a go too. Tina Fey was here earlier this year to do a comedy about something to do with Afghanistan, which is still untitled last time I looked.
It hasn't come out yet.
No, not yet. No,
yeah.
No. But she was all around town and got a lot of airplay, shall we say?
Yeah, I wish to have met her at that time, but didn't happen.
A friend of mine who I work with at the animal shelter was an extra on that, and he got to meet her briefly, I think he said, so he was impressed. But the genres have really opened up. Dramas, again, of course, especially with TV stuff like Manhattan and Longmire, as you mentioned, have done really, really big business as well, too.
And Breaking Bad,
yeah. And then the new thing they're shooting for that cable thing with Nick Nolte, I can't think of the title of it right now, too, but that's... I think that's partially a comedy as well. So,
So where is New Mexico film industry, film and TV industry headed at this point, which is a point of tremendous change in the industry, both the technology and the distribution?
I think, just personal thoughts, I think we're going to continue to do well because we have lots of benefits here, including the incentives besides and the landscape and the fact that we're really much better known now than we were before, thanks to shows like, again, Breaking Bad and Longmire and such, and even No Country for Old Men, which kind of opened a different door for feature films, because the Coen brothers who made that have been back several times to do other things. Like their remake of True Grit, they did a short, they wrote another film called Gambit, which was a remake that was partially shot in the state. I think it's going to continue an upward trend. Many of the other states that jumped on the bandwagon when they saw the success of our film incentive program and our film office have kind of taken steps back, cut their funding. Some have stopped entirely. We had a lot of competition from Louisiana for a while, but I just read recently that they're cutting back on their incentive program as well. So the more they do that, then that, I think that would open more opportunities for us. There's been at least 10 productions partially shot here in the state this year. Everything from the returning TV shows to the Magnificent Seven remake, which makes me roll my eyes, but that's okay. I'll see it anyway.
It might be awesome.
It might be, yes. They didn't ask me to star in it, though. how rude. And then just all sorts of other things on the horizon. I see there's other things that are about to be released. And again, like films like Sicario, the Batman versus Superman film being released next year is probably shot here. So there's some big stuff out there for sure.
What was your favorite part about writing this book, New Mexico Filmmaking?
Favorite part would be getting it done. It was a project I wanted to play with for many years, and I finally just sat down and did it. My favorite part was finding some of those films and finding new films that weren't listed in the filmography and such, and adding those, and being able to talk to some people, again, like Max Evans, the author, who's a friend of mine who lives in Albuquerque, about the past stuff. Yeah, the book itself doesn't cover present day that much because there's so much publicity about that now. I just figured I'd kind of pause there. And there's also another gentleman writing a book about the incentive program that's coming out in 2017 that I'd met, so I'd let him have that part of it. I get to watch movies instead of talking about dollar figures. And the research itself was interesting because, much to my surprise, there was nothing out there. I thought I'd find this tons and tons of information and old files. And like, there is absolutely nothing.
No files, nothing. No paper.
No.
Burned to the ground warehouses full of what were once movies.
Exactly, yes. It was like the Golden God in paperwork. The State Archives Office had a few files mostly from many years ago, from a gentleman who was the first kind of state film historian who worked at the film office for free, I believe, Philip St. George Cook, who wrote to various studios and stars saying, hey, did you ever make a movie here? If so, what was the title? Because he was trying to create the filmography.
Nice.
But there's stuff there from Lillian Gish, excuse me, John Wayne, Roy Rogers, or some of the people that wrote back. But other than that, there's like maybe a half an inch worth of stuff. The photo archive office had like 10 photos, and I was able to identify two of those for them.
Oh, my goodness. But the book is full of wonderful photos.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing in our archives, so it's just stuff I had to find elsewhere, and it's like all out of state, it's all imports.
Yeah. Well, there's wonderful, it's a wonderful book with lots of like movie posters and stills and a very handsome Paul Newman and all kinds of
twice no less. Huh?
Twice no less, and Jane Russell looking quite sultry, and Jean Tierney looking very beautiful. Mm-hmm. A lot of the top Hollywood stars of the last century have worked here in New Mexico.
Yeah, there's been everyone from Clark Gable and Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn have been here to Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, John Wayne again of course, Rock Hudson, Shelley's Throne more recently. Jennifer Lawrence got her start in New Mexico with her first big film, which was shot in southern New Mexico called The Burning Plain, which is a personal favorite, a marvelous movie. So yeah, there's been a lot of big names coming through here, not just the ones that live here either. So, yeah.
Jeff Berg is author of the book New Mexico Filmmaking. He will be speaking at Opposite Books at DeVargas Mall this Friday, the 4th of December at 6 in the evening. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.